Welcome to Stories After Midnight. We'll be finishing our Harmony Care Home series today with I'm the manager of Harmony Care Home, and I can never leave. This series is by Let's Split Up. I really hope you enjoy it. Special shout out to my patrons for helping make this series possible. Let's get started. In 1963, a beautiful young blonde stepped into the office of Roderick Crane. Roderick was handsome, intelligent, and mesmerizing, and the young Lolita Carmichael fell deeply under his sway. Whether she had sadistic tendencies before then is a mystery, but what is certain is that by the time Roderick founded Harmony Care Home in 1969, renovating the original building and adding the sub-basement with its special room, Lolita was wholly devoted to his bloody rituals. Residents often reported hearing shrieks overnight, and in the morning, the deceased would be shipped out in body bags for cremation. Some residents reported being brought downstairs, having hot wax dripped onto their skin, or strange words chanted over them in a pitch-dark room. These allegations were dismissed as signs of the patient's dementia. But the allegations persisted, and after one resident was found with maggots dripping out of open wounds, and another fled into the night to die of hypothermia, a flurry of media attention put the care home in the national spotlight. The ensuing outcry brought Harmony Care Home to the brink of closure. Then, on August 16, 1981, the fire began that would ultimately claim over a dozen lives and permanently shutter its doors. Whether Roderick truly intended to use the blaze as a means to complete the ritual, or whether he merely intended to collect on the insurance, is unclear. But what is clear is that Lolita was by now a liability to Roderick. He escaped alone, leaving the building to burn with his former assistant inside. Though strangely, the fire abated of its own accord shortly after he left, causing mostly cosmetic damage to the building, save for the destroyed south wing. Harmony Care Home sat abandoned for decades. Until 2003, when a woman named Queenie Smith arrived to inspect the property for redevelopment. After discovering a beautiful but comatose blonde with a broken neck in the basement, Queenie fell under the care home's spell, becoming nurse to the young woman. Soon after that, Queenie vanished, her identity and assets taken over by the sleeping blonde in room 333, who by this time was recruiting more staff and residents. The rest, as they say, is history. As for the future, Harmony Care Home has been slowly accumulating funds, with a plan for total renovation and a grand reopening to attract an influx of new residents. But the care home was hit hard by the sudden consecutive losses of its head nurse and manager. It was around this time that a con man came along. Hey folks, Jack here. I had to play a trick with my last post, sorry about that, but I figured if you were fooled, I knew for sure she was, so let's unpack my lies. The truth is, becoming a resident was always the plan. There was just no way I was gonna get in that ritual room and see the name carved on the ceiling without being converted. But I had to make it look like I was trying, even if I was mostly just trying not to crap my pants. Can't tell you how genuinely terrifying all that creeping around in the dark was. I wasn't lying about that. Obviously, I avoided mentioning Lolita's history before this post. I investigated her right at the outset, but it was imperative she think I dismissed her. So I tried to keep her relegated to the role of creepy ghost secretary. Also, there's one very important thing I neglected to tell you at all. It happened when Lucas and I first encountered the custodian in the ritual room. Remember I mentioned a book on the table? What I didn't mention to you is that I actually tore most of the pages from that book and hid them and brought them out with me. Those moments down in that dim corridor with the lights flickering off were truly the most terrifying I've ever experienced. But if it hadn't been for Lucas's screw-up with the elevator, we'd never have stumbled across the book, and it was in the pages of the book that the seeds of this whole plan started. I would be remiss not to mention it. Also, I did not come up with the plan solely on my own. I had input from Emma, Aaron, Melanie, Minji, Jose, and others. Wow, Jack, that's a lot of names. Yep, I haven't mentioned them before because, well, it was safer not to. But now let's talk about Emma and Aaron and Lucas and Darlene and everybody else and what they've been up to while I was in room 313. In the beginning of her hospitalization, Darlene begged to be returned to Harmony Care Home and clung to the corpse of her dead cat, Mickles, only releasing him after a violent fit. But after several days, she underwent a dramatic physical and mental recovery, shedding years until she seemed less an octogenarian with dementia and more a slightly confused 60-year-old. Upon her discharge, she had mostly returned to her old self and seemed to believe she had stayed at Harmony Care to recover from an illness. She expressed a desire to return someday in her sunset years, but for the time being seemed happy in her daily life, and was especially overjoyed to be greeted by Prometheus, waiting for her at home. Yep, Emma took him back. Can't believe how much I miss the big fluff ball. Thanks for all the fishy kisses, buddy. Lucas actually had a harder time reconciling his memories of Harmony Care Home with reality, since he was shocked to find he'd essentially been a missing person while working his new job. Furious over his stolen days, he became a dedicated part of Emma's team, along with Aaron and their mutual friend, Minji. As for Emma, she went to extraordinary lengths to make sure she would not forget me. We'd already tested and found out that on the days we didn't initially meet up at the care home, the amnesia was too powerful for her to overcome. The only way for her to fight its effects after I'd gone was by making sure she always came and touched the peeling sign. Touch made the illusion fall away, so that she could see the black grime streaking its surface. Only then would she review our notes and videos and actually believe them. For the duration of my time in room 313, Emma lived in a B&B nearby so that she would not miss a day of touching the sign. Then around 10 each morning, after she'd gotten her own memories in order, she'd message the others and they'd meet up to resume her main project, reaching out to families. You see, breaking the amnesia is difficult, but not impossible, especially when some of these family members already had wriggling doubts about the fates of their loved ones. Emma's tireless efforts allowed her to slowly make inroads with about a dozen people out of the hundreds who'd recently lost relatives. She also reached out to various agencies, sending the evidence she had gathered of incongruities that didn't add up, suggestive of paranormal activity, trying in all these little ways to bring a spotlight to the care home. In short, while I was still stuck in 313, typing up Reddit posts, Emma was laying the groundwork, doing all the heavy lifting that would be critical to our plan. And now let's talk about those secret messages I spent so much time crafting. Too obvious? Too hidden? The first ones were literally written in bold, so if you didn't notice them, get your eyes checked. Go back, and look for them in the first and second posts. In the subsequent posts, look for all caps, or if you don't want to keep looking, you can just read them here. Number 1. Help. I'm trapped in room 313. Save me. 2. Call the police. Tell them Fitzroy's body is here. Come save me. 3. Emma, do not come. It knows. 4. Arson. Call authorities as distraction. Meet sub-basement for ritual. 5. The name is Fizem. Now, now, now. The last two are the ones that really matter. One of them explains the plan. Set fire to the building as a distraction while sneaking into the sub-basement to perform the ritual. The other gives the names, or at least the word Roderick used when summoning the entity, which was Schism, as well as the time for our plan's execution. Now. The moment I post. The moment Emma reads and decodes the message. Now, now, now. Let's go there. Now. At the moment of the final message, Emma is probably at her usual coffee shop with Aaron and Lucas and Minji, all of them reviewing their notes because they have to do this every morning due to the amnesia. Lucas maybe asks Emma something like this. So did you guys really hook up? Shut up. No? Maybe? I don't remember. Like, I actually do remember him, says Lucas. Because I remember working there and I know they're false memories or whatever, but he has a visitor. But he was a visitor and we went down the elevator and he tried holding my hand the whole time. Emma snorts and smirks, shakes her head over her oat milk latte. She actually does know we hooked up because she has a video message she made for herself about it. But she doesn't share that with the group because of how strange it makes her feel. She's also wearing my hoodie, the same one I've got on in the video with my face stitched up. And maybe the feel of it, or the scent of it, helps her remember me a little bit. but mostly she is driven by her memories of what the care home did to Grams, because of what she recalls when she touches the peeling sign each morning. She remembers meeting with me in the parking lot, and the book with the chicken soup dust jacket. She has the book now. And then she remembers seeing Grams holding the dead cat, the dust jacket coming off. In her notes, she has written, "I've read all Jack's posts, and it's like, I know his face when I see him in the videos. I even know what he's going to say. Usually something idiotic and jokey. But who is this guy? If nothing else, I have to rescue him from this care home so I can at least meet him." Emma is still writing when she gets a notification. She reads the final post, writes down the name, and immediately begins reaching out to the family she's connected with. And now, while Emma and company are reading my post, I am hunched at my keyboard, jaw clenched and head swimming, trying with all my might to stay in the present, because it's been over 2 weeks and the illusion, it really does swim in and out. When my fingers are tapping on the keys, I remember, but when I just sit here, it seeps over me, and I'm in that happy, dreamy place. And it's so easy to lose hours and hours there, especially because I'm so tired all the time. Part of my exhaustion is sleep deprivation. Seriously, how many winks would you catch in a haunted care home? Not to mention I've been off my injections, so my hormones are all out of whack from missing tea. I've also had very little to eat because I don't have a fridge in this room, and the only food I trust is the chips and prepackaged stuff I brought with me. So I've mostly been operating on caffeine and terror. In short, I was a mess before I got connected to the custodian. But ever since the connection, the more I exercise, the more I eat, the more I try to regain energy, the more deeply I'm drained. So I haven't really been moving much in the past few days. My phone rings. Emma. We're only supposed to message each other casually to pretend everything is normal. It's probably some bullcrap just to throw Lolita off for today. I open it so I can craft a reply. "Minji found out we hooked up and keeps joking about me having babies. We used protection, right?" I just stare. Stare for ages. Total disbelief. And then I laugh. Laugh so hard I almost cry. "Emma, read your notes again, babe. You can't have my babies no matter how much you want to." "I never said I want to. What are you talking about? It was a question." "I'm trans. If I got you pregnant, that would be some immaculate conception miracle." "Oh, okay. You don't remember me at all, do you?" My heart is hammering my ribs like it's going to shatter them, panic rising. Because if she's forgotten me, has she forgotten the plan? Am I going to be trapped here? Will I have to escape on my own? How? And suddenly I cannot breathe, cannot think, cannot process anything as my vision closes in. Until there is only those three dots blinking across my screen. My breath held, my life suspended there. The dots vanish. Emma doesn't respond. The air leaves my body in a whoosh. I don't remember sinking to the floor. But the next thing I'm sensible of is that I'm leaning against the wall below the window, angling my head to see the blue sky and hear birds chirping. And some part of me knows that it's November, and the forecast is cloudy, and I shouldn't hear birdsong, but I close my eyes and listen anyway, and pretend I feel the sunshine, and I just sink back into the illusion, because there's nowhere left for me to go. Meanwhile, Emma, Lucas, Aaron, and Minji arrive at the care home, converging with family members of residents whom Emma contacted. It is the most visitors that have ever gathered at one time since the care home's closure 4 decades ago. After some brief discussion and after everyone has touched the sign and the peeling paint, Gemma Rivera, the sister of Ronnie, leads the family members into the lobby to demand to visit their loved ones. Emma, Lucas, and Aaron, meanwhile, sneak across the grounds to the damaged south wing and fling Molotovs and smoke bombs, while Minji drives into cellular range and calls the fire department. Before long, flames roar out the broken windows of the south wing. Sirens wail. I am so immersed in the dream of birdsong and sunshine that I almost don't hear the sirens. It's like being high, an intoxicating blend of euphoria and despair, because I don't want to wake up back to reality. But as the sirens grow louder and part of my brain whispers, "Hey, Jack, get up! The plan! Move!" And despite the exhaustion, my muscles tense, limbs dragging me upwards into the door. Oh my God, my legs feel so atrophied, I didn't realize how bad it was until now, with my muscles wobbling like jelly beneath me. I'm not sure if I can even make it to the ritual room. Come on, Jack. You used to do parkour. You can handle the stairs. I'm stunned at how much smoke is in the hall. Feeling my way down the corridor, I pause twice to catch my breath. By the time I make it to the lobby, firefighters and family members are arguing with Lolita and the dead nurses about evacuating. I can't really hear what's going on. There's a lot of confusion in the cacophony of voices. Avoiding the crowd, I duck around the hallway and down to the basement stairs, open the door, and plunge in. Pitch black. Forgot about the pitch black. Normally, my inner monologue would supply me with a little humor to help me through the scary bits, but it's just a series of screw me's over and over again, mixed with some, "Say goodbye, Jax." I'm too ill and exhausted for levity. In the pitch dark basement, it's always possible to meet the custodian. I scurry as fast as I can to the hidden door, to the stairwell that leads down to the ritual room. I have just passed through the door when, shuffle shuffle, something is behind me, and I slam the door shut and quickly descend the final staircase down to the ritual room. The staircase is long, seemingly stretching forever, and there are no railings. I cling to the walls, desperately praying I don't stumble. It would be easy to break my neck and a dumb way to die after all I've been through. And then, I'm in the ritual room. I flick on the light switch, and a single, golden orb illuminates the table, casting the wood and the rug and the symbols in stark relief, while leaving the rest of the room shuttered in darkness. I lurch forward, fumble in my pockets for the pages on which I've made notes of the incantation and the name. Something clatters behind me. I turn my head, squint into the darkness at a shape shuffling just outside of the light. Ronnie, he's followed me down the staircase. I'm just about to retreat when cold fingers seize my wrist. Another hand grabs my other arm. Even if I had the strength to thrash and fight, the grip of the dead is vice-like, and the rotting odor chokes me. I'm dragged away from the table and into the center of the room. Byrne, Gerard, Kendra, and other living dead are all around me. An ambush, and then a whisper at my ear, and the glowing figure of Lolita appears beside me, grinning ear to ear beneath wide blue eyes. Hey, Jack. The first time I visited Queenie in room 333, I had no idea who she was, only that she was among the oldest at the care home, a bedridden, rumpled old lady who seemed to always be sleeping. Unlike most residents, who lasted only a few weeks to a few months, she'd lived here for years. I had a better idea of her identity the next time I met her, when I entered in the role of manager to fix the phone in her room. I approached her bedside to tell her the phone was fixed and squeezed her withered hand. Her skin felt smooth, young. For a fraction of a second, the illusion broke, and she was a beautiful and ageless blonde, eyes closed and endless dreaming. Then I realized her hand and the wrinkles returned. The old woman appeared to scowl at me. I smiled as if I hadn't noticed a thing and said, "Phone's working. Ring if you need anything, Queenie." That encounter confirmed my suspicions of what happened in 1981. Lolita is Queenie, and beneath the illusion, she hasn't aged a day. My guess is Roderick broke her neck on that fateful night, intending her to die. But she did not die. Instead, she achieved something Roderick continually failed. She completed the ritual and summoned something from the other side. You see, Roderick spent so much time sacrificing others, like a man killing one turkey, then a dozen to make a bigger feast. But they were not truly a sacrifice, because they meant nothing to him. But the pain and anguish and misery Lolita experienced as she lay dying of a broken neck was not another person's, but her own. Her suffering, as she offered herself, was real, and the custodian answered her. It gave her immortal life while locking her ageless body in a coma. From within this accursed sleep, she could dream herself back into her perfect youth, dream the care home into whatever reality she wished, and draw others into that dream. She could control the dead, moving them like puppets and seeing through their eyes, and after I was converted, through mine, and thus spy on everyone in her domain. If the custodian is the care home's paranormal beating heart, Lolita is the brain, and she can continue living this way forever, so long as she keeps the custodian fed. The living dead dragged me to my knees like a prisoner before a queen. Oh, Jack, what a complete idiot you are. Lolita claps her hands girlishly. With your cute little plan and all your secret messages, did you really think I wouldn't notice? I mean, I kind of thought you'd be distracted, to be honest, I mumble. Please, I knew you'd make one last big try, but where are your friends? She pouts. Poor Jack, did they forget about you? They're coming with the feds. Emma's been sending out her notes on this place. You're on the map, Lolita. You're gonna get shut down this time for good. Oh, come on now. These last-ditch lies are pretty pathetic. But then she stops. Her blue eyes widen. What? She blinks. Wait, what? Hey, I say to Lolita. Hey, this part's important. The secret messages. Are you sure you read them correctly? What are... She demands, staring off at something I can't see. What are you doing here? Guessing you didn't read them that correctly then. You must have missed the secret ones. There were the bold and capped secret ones, and then there were the secret ones with the typos. But you have to count three words after... Shut up, you brainless babbling idiot! She screams at me. The dead hands gripping my arms fling me into a bookshelf, knocking over volumes off it that topple around me. My head rings from the impact. I'm trying to push myself up when one of the dead grabs me again and slams me down on the table. Ow. But I still find it in me to snicker as she screams at me. Jack, you little bastard! You see, the first set of messages were obvious, so that you, dear readers, and definitely Lolita would find them. But the second set, you were almost certain to miss them unless you knew the system Emma and I agreed upon beforehand. Misspelled words, count three words after. The full set of secret messages reads as follows. Number 1. Help. I'm trapped in room 313. Save me. Lolita is in room 333. Number 2. Call the police. Tell them Fitzroy's body is in here. Come save me. Bring weapons. 3. Emma, do not come at nose. Use window. Don't be seen. 4. Arson. Call authorities as distraction. Meet sub-basement for ritual. No ritual. Use distraction to kill Olita's body. 5. The name is Fizem. Now. Now. And this is why, in my prior posts, I had to pretend Lolita wasn't important enough to factor into my considerations. I wanted her to think I was dead set on the ritual, and that she should bring all her puppets down here to meet me and stop me. Except I was never going to take out the custodian. If I've learned anything from previous paranormal encounters, it's not to mess with any sort of entity. But unlike the custodian, Lolita is human. With human faults and foibles, she got used by Roderick when he had her light the fire and then all but murdered her. And if Roderick could trick her, I could too. She thought I was here to play the hero. That's funny. I already said, Jack here isn't the hero in any universe. Nope. Emma's the hero. I'm just here as the distraction. While Lolita and her puppets are ambushing me, Emma, Lucas, and Aaron are nowhere near. No, they don't even enter the building, where they might be seen by one of Lolita's puppets. Instead, they sneak around outside, keeping well away from view and dressed in firefighter clothes, so that they won't arouse any suspicions should someone glance at the windows. Lucas, a trained firefighter, helps them set the long ladder to the window of room 333, and then Lucas ascends first, followed by Aaron and lastly Emma, all three armed with fire axes or machetes. On shattering the window and climbing in, Lucas finds himself face to face with a bedridden old woman.
What?
Says the startled old woman.
What are you doing here?
I think we got the wrong room, guys, Lucas calls down.
Bring her down, it's the right room, shrills Emma. Lucas obediently reaches for the old woman, only to swear when a cold hand seizes him from behind and drags him backwards.
Lucas!
Shrieks Emma.
Aaron climbs faster, scrambling into the room just in time to see an impossible sight. An old man throttling Lucas. Lolita kept one of her dead residents with her, my gamble apparently not succeeding in luring all of her living dead down into the basement. Aaron rushes forward, football tackling the old man only to scream, when upon his contact with the corpse, he breaks the illusion and finds himself face to face with Jacob Mortimer, maggots wriggling and rotting eyes and teeth falling from his gaping mouth.
Oh my God!
Aaron skitters away on his backside while Lucas coughs and chokes, struggling to sit up. The dead man lunges for them.
I'll kill you!
Lolita shrieks. I roll off the table and duck behind it, but then the corpse of Kendra Jones lifts that whole heavy thing right up. Oh no. I try to crawl back, but there's nowhere to go. She brings the solid oak table down on top of me.
Hell, hell!
Aaron swings his machete as Jacob Mortimer lunges with almost inhuman speed. Emma climbs into the window, just as the dead man takes the machete in the arm, but then grabs Aaron's face, shrieking. Emma leaps on Jacob Mortimer's back, only to be shrugged off effortlessly. But Lucas is now up, axe in hand. The dead man staggers as Lucas drives the axe into his skull, and he releases Aaron, turning to face Lucas, who backs away.
Where the hell is the old woman?
Yells Emma.
She disappeared! She disappeared!
Calls Aaron as he snatches up his machete again, lunging once more at the dead man. While Lucas and Aaron circle the dead man, Emma looks frantically around the room. She knows the dead man will eventually kill them, knows from my story about the murdered cop that these living dead are far stronger than they look, and more are most definitely on their way up from the basement by now. She must act fast. But where is Lolita? How is it possible she disappeared? Before climbing into the room, Emma saw Lucas reaching down toward that bed beside the window, and then suddenly Emma understands. Unlike me, Emma cannot see through the illusion. But she doesn't have to, because she has noticed where the dead man battles Lucas and Aaron, and where he avoids, and that he does not attempt to throw either of them at or near the empty bed. Emma lunges with her machete, snarling, and brings it down with all her might in an arc to that empty pillow where someone had recently lain. And the blade cleaves straight into flesh, into the shoulder of a sleeping young woman with blonde hair. And the illusion of a scream pierces the air, and then Emma reels back and swings again, and this time takes the head off. When the Lolita illusion disappears, the living dead in the ritual room collapse. The will that was puppeting them gone. I'm still lying beneath that heavy overturned table, alive, but I have no strength to lift it or wriggle out from under it. I'm stuck unless someone comes down and saves me, or... tingles. Oh, I know these tingles. Not the custodian, no, these are hot, cold, and even though I've just gone through an experience objectively far scarier than anything I've dealt with before, still the reaction in my body is purely physical. A gut-wrenching, heart-thudding, muscle-clenching fear. I cannot control the gut punch of terror any more than I can stop the crawling of my skin. It's a terror I know very, very well. Hey, lady, I say by the way of greeting as the shadows coalesce around me. A woman steps out of the dark. She wasn't there before, but her vivid red dress is unmistakable, hugging her curves and pooling around her shapely legs. And she kneels beside me and purrs. Hey, Jack. Is it that time then? I ask. Pretty sure she's here to kill me, probably by tracing those claws across my skin and then peeling the skin right off and reaching in to tug out my guts and tie them in a nice bow while I'm screaming and screaming. That's pretty much how I always imagine it. But she says, I know you won't sign a contract with me now. You'd rather do something totally wasteful, like die here in this place and become the schism's permanent manager. But one day, Jack, one day, you'll be desperate enough to call for me and sign. And next time, I won't lose. But for now, you're still free, so you'd better do it your best at. Run, Jackie boy, run, or you'll be here forever. I'm about to point out that I can't run, but she grips the table in one delicate hand and without so much as a grunt of effort, heaves it so that it slams into the far wall, blocking the door to the elevator corridor, leaving only the hidden staircase back up, an indication which way I should run. By the time I stop gaping, the lady is gone. But I can feel the beginnings of a kind of scrambling in my head like static, so I run. As the efforts of Lolita's death ripple across the entirety of the care home, screams fill the air, Panic suffuses the atmosphere as people cling to each other, screaming, crying. Everyone can see it now. The illusion is broken. The people Emma summoned, they're all looking at the reality of Harmony Care Home. The broken windows, the rotting furniture, the streaks on the peeling walls, and of course, the dead, seated at the tables, mummifying on beds or in armchairs. Ben's corpse with her mouth full of pills, lying halfway up the staircase, and just below her, the putrefying Kendra Jones. Soon after, the feds are called out, some sort of specialized team. The rest of us who are inside have all been corralled outside, and no one is allowed to enter or go near. It's as I'm being bundled in a blanket and into an ambulance that my phone rings.
Jack, are you okay?
Define okay.
Oh, thank God, where are you? The witch is dead.
I tell Emma I am being taken to the hospital. She says she will meet me there. First, she and Aaron and Lucas must deal with Lolita's body. They plan to bury it somewhere remote, far from any possibility of resurrection by the custodian. Where they actually complete this act, I do not know. And now, nobody ever will, because they did not record notes about it. Unfortunately, their task takes them longer than I expect. By the time they arrive at the hospital, I have succumbed to the combination of weakness and fatigue. I am deep in sleep. When I wake, I find Emma has left me a video message on my phone, chronicling the events of the day, ending with a faint, regretful smile as she says, "Sweet dreams, Jack." But I don't have sweet dreams. I'm not sure if I ever will again. They did something to me in there, in that room where they connected me with the custodian. They tattooed something on my eyes, some of those same strange squiggling symbols as are on the ceiling. I think it's how Lolita could see through my vision. Darlene and the other residents have these same markings, and now, anytime I close my eyes, I see that place. I see the room where they kept me, 313. The care home is gone, Lolita is dead and buried, but they planted a small part of the care home in me, and now, anytime I dream, I can never truly leave. So that's the second paranormal being that's marked me. When I came out of my coma after escaping the lady, I woke to find a new tattoo mingling with the snake and abstract designs on my left arm. Her face is there, the eyes meeting mine anytime I look at it. And now, with whatever the care home did to my eyeballs, it's getting crowded here on this flesh of mine. I can still see the markings on my eyes, faint red lines forming strange symbols over each iris. It's now been 2 days since my escape from the care home. I've spent most of that time recuperating and typing up this post. I've seen nothing on the news, presumably because of the amnesia, as well as the lack of photographic evidence. Anyone who has been to the care home has forgotten. Emma, her friends, family members of the residents. Not a one of them remembers anything about that day. Neither do I, beyond my notes, of course. As for the care home itself, it's become a dead zone, cordoned off by the authorities. Even the street that runs by it is permanently blocked. All website material related to it has disappeared, including all my reviews, and it no longer pops up on GPS. I did manage to access some of the accounts that I had access to as a manager, and transfer a fair bit of capital over before Harmony Care's assets got frozen and became inaccessible to me. I do not know what government team or agency is responsible, but it would seem they did a very thorough cleanup. I have one more thing I'd like to tell you about. A video Emma took on the morning I was about to sign myself into the care home. We were in the parking lot. I just lit a joint, presumably to shake off some of the jitters, and Emma aimed her phone at me and started recording. "I don't want to forget you." "Emma, we know what's going to happen." The camera shakes, turns until Emma is facing it on herself, her eyes wet with tears and her mouth twisted in a scowl as she wipes at her cheeks and talks to the camera. "Emma, remember, listen, you have to remember, this is Jack." The camera flicks to me before turning back to herself. "He's the guy who risked his life to help you get Grams out. You're going to wake up thinking he's just some dumb scammer, but he's not. You remember. Remember that he put his life in danger for you and Grams and everyone else. And if he dies, remember that he is a good person, no matter how much he pretends not to be. Promise me. Jack, promise you'll help me remember you." When I look at this video, I see a beautiful girl whose face I only recognize from our shared notes. And this beautiful girl is in tears, just pouring out her heart openly, bravely. Then she turns the camera on a man in his late 20s, a man who looks like he's been through it. His dark eyes are tense with what I have to assume is at least three-quarter parts terror, given what he is about to do. But also, he looks frozen by emotions he doesn't know how to process. When he says, "I promise," he looks at the camera, at me, like he knows I'm going to be watching in the future and it'll be on me to keep this promise or not. And for the life of me, I cannot decipher what he means by that look. Tell her? Not tell her? Does any of it even matter when we can't remember each other? I look at the video and it's like watching raw emotional footage of two strangers. What would I even say to that girl in the video now? What has a girl like her got to do with a guy like me? But here's what I would tell her. I guess. I wish you and your Grams and the cats all the best. I consider making this post to be a fulfillment of my promise to the past you from the video. Promise delivered. And I hope that maybe that past version of you can be happy now, knowing that you're okay. I'm okay. Everything turned out okay. And hey, I may not remember you, but the guy in the video sends his love. He wanted me to tell you that. To tell you both to be happy, now and forever. Love, Jack. That's the end of this series. I really, really hope you enjoyed it. It was definitely a long one, so I hope you thought it was good. If you liked it, then please consider subscribing, maybe liking the video, or at the very least, just let me know what you thought. That's what I'm really concerned about. And if you'd like to hear more, well, you know what to do. If you're everywhere else, I don't know what your options are, but I just appreciate you for listening. And a huge shout out to my Patreon members for helping make this series possible. Your generosity does mean the most. If you'd like to send me your story, you can at storiesaftermidnight.com. And if you'd like to, you can come join our Discord and hang out and chat with us. But with all that said, I really hope you enjoyed yourself here. We'll see you in the next one.